Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
All right, welcome to GoTo Book Club. My name is Sarah Tarapawala, and I'll be the host for today's book review. I'm the CTO for ThoughtWorks APAC, but today I'm joined here by Dave Thomas, otherwise known as Prag Dave, and the co-founder, co-author of Programmatic Programmer, and now the author of a new book titled Simplicity. Dave, thanks for being here.
Hey, my pleasure. My pleasure. Always nice to chat. So I got to say, it's pragmatic.
Pragmatic. Yes. Well, Dave, you're a British-born programmer, publisher, educator. You wrote the classic Pragmatic Programmer. You founded the Pragmatic Bookshelf, put many, many books out to print. You signed the original Agile Manifesto, and along the way coined ideas that we use today, like DRY, so don't repeat yourself, Code Carter, and you help popularize languages like Ruby and Elixir. Dave, for most people, the name Prag Dave already precedes you. And some of us learned the craft of programming through your books and through your works. Others have heard of you from the principles that you've developed in the manifesto and some of the other DRY and Code Carters. But for those meeting you for the first time today, how do you introduce yourself these days?
Pretty much the same way I've always done. First of all, that was a very sweet introduction. I'm not too sure I recognize myself from it. But yeah, my fundamental introduction is I'm Dave Thomas. I'm a programmer. And to me, that kind of sums it up. But to be a programmer, you have to be a lot of other things as well. Mm-hmm. And so when I say that, it's kind of a shorthand for I am really... I've been programming for 50 years, and I still code pretty much every day, and I still learn new things every day, and that's why I love it. I love just being in an industry, a profession, where it is constantly a challenge to understand what's going on and actually make it do something. And for me, that's just, I start each day wondering, okay, how can I do something today? What can I do? And that's just fantastic. And along the way, I've been lucky enough to get involved with some projects where I can share some of the stuff I've learned. Most of the stuff I've learned has been questions, but share some of that stuff. And kind of, that's a kind of one of those positive feedback things, because once you start doing that, then people start asking you even more questions and you get deeper and deeper. And I love that. Absolutely love it.
Yeah. I love it. Well, I guess that brings you to your latest, the book that you're putting out and the title of Simplicity. That title itself, it just feels timeless. So why is 2025 the moment to write this book?
Well, actually, 2020 was the moment to write this book for me. But I think since about 2015, I have been really upset with the state of what people call agile. That I was very proud of the manifesto that we created, particularly because the real essence of the manifesto is just the four values on that first page. All the rest of it is just filler, really. Mm. And those four values, I think, are still as valid today as they were back then. But a value is simply a filter. It's a mechanism by which you can say, okay, I need to make a decision which would be better, which would work for me better. And that's what a value does for you. Now, what's happened is that that's uncomfortable because it means you've got to be constantly thinking. And so people have taken various practices and bundle them up into this thing called Agile. And we are kind of getting back to the situation that we were in the 1990s, where companies have big processes and developers are basically cogs in a machine. And that's exactly what we were fighting against when we sat down in Snowbird to craft the manifesto. So 2015, I think it was, I gave a go-to talk, Agile is Dead, which is actually probably my most watched talk. And I have the distinction of having Jeff Sutherland walk out on it. and that really encapsulated the way I was feeling at the time and still do, that we've taken something which was never meant to be a prescription. It was always meant to be a way of thinking about coding and developing value. And we've taken that and we've converted it into something you buy off the shelf. You go out and you spend your $2 million, you implement SAFe, and there you are. We're agile. Tick that box. But of course, we're not. And that's just not working. So I've always wanted to come and try and work out what post-agile means. And I've been kind of working on that on and off for years. And came to the conclusion there is no such thing. Because the failure of agile was kind of built into it from the start. And that is, it really doesn't work unless the entire environment goes along with it. Right? It's very, very hard to be a team using agile practices if your organization is doing TPS reports every month. That impedance mismatch has caused pretty much all of the problems I see with agility. So I kind of came to the conclusion that there was nothing I could say to developers that was going to help them overcome the problems with the way Agile has been implemented. So I started looking around for, okay, so what can I do for developers? What can developers do on their own? Doesn't require management buy-in, doesn't require a budget. And I started writing a book about that, and it went through three iterations. It was a tough thing to do. And the first ones were not called simplicity. They were to do with, you know, agility. In fact, actually, the first one was actually called lowercase a agility. And gradually it occurred to me that, no, we're not really talking about agility. Agility is part of it, but the real essence of it is trying to get back to a more understandable, scoped way of doing things. Because we, as developers, we have this really nasty habit of enjoying all the bright, sparkly things and trying to drag them into our projects whenever we do something. And so as a result, our projects get more and more complicated over time. And at the same time, our customers come to expect all the bright, shiny, you know, widgety things that we can put into our user interfaces. And so we build this burden that we're going to be carrying around with us. And it never gets less. It's going to get more and more. And as it does, our work becomes more and more sluggish, less and less agile. And I thought, we can do something about that. That is something that we as individual developers can control. And so that's what I'm trying to explore.
I really like that breaking it down. I've been sort of obsessing with the fact that simple isn't easy. Mm-hmm. Simple is actually quite difficult to do. And then we've got, you know, the work from Dave Snowden around the Kniffen framework, where we talk about complex and complicated work and their simple, how does simple and this idea of simplicity sort of fit in with, you know, what does complicated mean and complex? Like, how do we know something is simple without being simplistic, really?
Yeah. And I think that's a really good question. And it was the one I struggled with. I think that the first thing is, when you say simplicity is not easy, true simplicity requires mastery of something. Because if you look at, basically look at the stuff done by beginners in absolutely any topic, any subject, and what you'll see is things where they have bolted stuff together and sort of like, they know about this, they know about that, they know about something else, and they throw it all into a bag and pushing hard, and you got something that's been created. Whereas somebody who has control of that discipline can approach it in a very different way. And they will say, okay, this is what this final result's going to look like. I'm going to craft just that. And what they end up with is something which is relatively minimal, which works, which, I mean, looks good at not at a UI level, but at like a design or implementation or whatever level. And it just feels right. So you cannot just say, I want to write something with simplicity. All right. It's a question of acquiring simplicity. For me, that was the big realization that you can't tell people how to create simplicity. All you can do is show them how to teach themselves to have simplicity. It's a bit like if you look at great painters. I mean, some of them, particularly the older ones, yeah, it's all finely detailed stuff. But with many, it's big, broad brush strokes and lines that anyone could draw, but only they can actually create. And it's that mastery is what we're looking for.
And I think in the book, you've got a really nice framework that you use and that you sort of talk about in the book around the orient, step, and learn, sort of a process that we can follow or guidance that we can use every day to help us achieve that mastery on it. For our audience, can you explain that orient, step, learn? What does it mean, and how might one use it just on any ordinary Tuesday?
Sure. So there's two aspects to it. First of all, what does it actually mean to do it? And then the second is, why do it? And what it means to do it is to simply say, don't just launch off and do something, fundamentally. Before you start something, you need to know where you are now, where you want to be when you've finished, and how to know that you've finished. Once you've finished, then you've got to look back and say, okay, how did that go? What did I learn? You know? And, I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, this is the essence of agility, fundamentally. You know? It's planning for and using feedback as you go forward. And as with, I mean, things going back to XP, the trick is to make each of those steps as small as you possibly can, because you want to anticipate that you'll make mistakes, and you want those mistakes to be cheap. Yeah. So if you squander 5 minutes on some wild idea, who cares? If you squander 5 days, maybe you do. So we're going to have this kind of orient, step, learn process going on recursively. So it takes place at the very, very smallest level, but also at the total biggest level, the project level, or the bigger than that. And the trick is going to be remembering to do it, right? And that's one of the habits that we have to teach people. But there's a second reason to do it. And it was really interesting when I kind of came to this realization. What I'm trying to do here is to help people develop intuition, or that sense of this is right, that's wrong. It's like you can look at something and say, that's elegant, but you don't necessarily know why it's elegant, yeah? Or you wouldn't necessarily know how to do it for yourself, but you can look at what someone else has done and go, oh, wow, that's really beautiful. That's really well done, yeah? Well, the person who did that didn't just like do it from scratch. They have been doing that for years and years and years and learning as they go along what they've been doing, right? They've been giving themselves feedback. And all intuition is the accumulated experience that you've forgotten you have. Yeah? And it's all of those little patterns that have gone into your subconscious that trigger in certain events. In the same way that if you were out in the plains of Africa and you see movement in the grass, you don't actually have to be conscious of it to go, eek, you know, and start running away. It's the same thing. What you're doing here is you're building that kind of, and I'm sure every developer has it to some extent, right? I mean, everybody can finish running some code and they get this kind of something not right feeling. And one of the favorite things I do in talks is I'll say to the audience, okay, so how many of you have been working on a problem all day? There's been this bug and I draw it out into a big, long, shaggy dog story. But basically, you spend an entire day doing this bug. You go home, you're miserable to be with because this bug is still bugging you, right? You finally get to sleep. And then the next morning you wake up and you know what the bug was.
Right.
And I say, how many has that happened to? The entire audience puts their hands up, always, right? And so I say, so you can't tell me there is no intuition in programming because your sleeping brain solved a problem that you spent all day trying to solve. You know? And so what we're trying to do is to build that intuition, build that sense of what's nice, what's not nice. And the only way to build intuition is to give yourself feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's what the Orient Step Learn loop is doing. It deliberately asks you to give yourself feedback on everything you do. And not just in terms of like looking at it and going, oh, yeah, it's okay. But actually doing something like writing it down. Because the more modalities that you have to your feedback, the more channels you've got of information coming into your brain, and the bigger the pattern is that you're matching. I find that to be invaluable, right? If I'm on my own and I'm feeling kind of like safe, I'll actually do it out loud. I'll actually speak to myself because that way I'm using even more channels. And by doing that, you'll find that you start to build an intuition. There was an experiment I did, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. I really do not like Sudoku or however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
But I thought, okay, this will be an interesting challenge. So I started playing it and I played it for maybe a week, relatively intensely. And then I started saying, okay, now I'm going to stop trying to be logical and I'm just going to put numbers in. And it blew me away. It wasn't like I was some kind of savant. I couldn't do the whole thing. But when I got to a thing where I wasn't 100% sure, I would just take a guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I was right more often than I was wrong. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build that kind of intuition. And you can do it, right? By giving yourself feedback, you can do it.
And what I think is interesting about that, as you said at the start, it's the mastery of the skill of being simplistic. So as you master that as a skill, even you kind of go from your first attempt at doing anything isn't that simple, but you can stop, you can orient, you can think about it, maybe have another go, maybe have another attempt. But as you master that, the scope of what you do first time where it comes out simple, that scope kind of starts to grow as well, to the point where other people just think it looks easy because you've actually got that intuition as to like the sense, the code sense as to like, is this code going to be smelly or not? How do I not make it smelly? I had a great conversation with somebody many years ago who was teaching me TDD, and they said, I can write good TDD looking code without writing tests first because they've got that intuit of
exactly
what,
right. Yeah.
What the code looks like. They still did TDD because they there was the value that they got from that. And so I think that that is a really fascinating thought where you can apply that orient, step, learn on a very small scale, but also on that macro level and continue to do it sort of as an individual, but also as a team.
And I mean, the testing is actually a good example because, like you say, the more you get into doing testing, the better your instincts are. And I have this pretty strong belief that the major benefit of doing test. I don't like test-driven development particularly, but I do like testing. Mm-hmm. And I think the benefit of testing is that you get to think about the design of your code, because if you don't design it properly, it's really hard to test. And so over the years, I've come to realize that by thinking about testing, I produce less coupled code, more modular code, et cetera, et cetera. Then I thought, okay, so it's become kind of like a habit. It's become a mantra that you do testing. I mean, I just did a lot of work in the Ruby community, and the Ruby community is kind of like rabid about testing. And I always get nervous whenever I'm in a state where I feel like I'm an acolyte of something. I have to do it because that's what everybody does. So I decided to stop testing for a while and then see what happened. And I think that is actually part of the orient, step, learn. That's actually one of the harder things to do. And that is, you don't just want to get feedback on what you've done, but you want to get feedback on what happens when you don't do it. Yeah. You might believe that lining up all your code and making it look pretty is really, really good. And I personally do. But that's only an opinion. And what you have to do is to test that opinion. And the only way I know to test it is to stop doing it and see what happens. In the same way that one of the trick questions I always ask agile teams is, are you doing the same stuff now that you were doing a year ago?
Mm-hmm.
Because if they are, they're not agile.
Yeah.
By definition.
Yeah.
You've got to stop doing things. And that's the one of the key benefits that you get from aiming for simplicity, because to make things simpler, you cut things away. And so you have to know, is what I'm cutting away doing me harm or good?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the feedback comes in.
Yeah. I have learned that lesson many times over to have testing. My professional life, all the tests are there. It's beautiful, wonderful code, test-driven development. My home hobby projects, which I come back to every so often, have a very small spattering of tests. It's only me. It doesn't really matter. And every time I come back to it, I think, why haven't got any tests in here? I'm making myself so much harder just to get up and get moving. So I love that thought about, like, what, not only why are we doing it, what happens when we don't do it?
Right.
Well, yeah. So I guess some of the book is written for developers and for insights that developers can take away. But how does simplicity continue, or how does it diverge from the stuff that you've put down in Pragmatic Programmer 25 years ago? Is it a continuation of it, or?
Can I get away with by saying it is consistent with it?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call it a continuation, but like the Pragmatic Programmer, it is largely things that individuals can do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is not big, sweeping, grand organizational strategies.
Yeah.
This is, in the same way, Pragmatic Programmer is very much about how an individual can approach the act of programming. This is the same kind of thing. It's just more focused on one particular aspect of it. And that is this idea of trying to be elegant, trying to be minimal. So I would say it's not a continuation, but it's also not a contradiction. It doesn't go against anything, I don't think, in the Pragmatic Programmer. It just, like I say, it just focuses on, it's almost like you took it and then rotated it 90 degrees and looked at things just a slightly different way.
Right. If the book talks to development teams, what about companies or organizations? Like how can sort of the organization make sense of the lessons that we've got from simplicity?
Well, do you want the optimistic answer or the cynical answer? I think that the problems, as I said earlier, the problems with agility were that organizations in general are not that agile. I mean, many are, but in general, not so much. Jessica Kerr gave a really great talk I went to a couple of years back, where she described large organizations as being self-healing bureaucracies. And whenever you inject a change in, then the compensation structure and the hierarchies inside an organization fight that change. Even though they may outwardly say, oh, yeah, that's a really good idea, inwardly it's still, how am I going to get my reward at the end of the year? And so I don't know if you are going to get large companies or even whatever companies to make that kind of shift in their mindset. I haven't seen very much evidence of it. Because even if the company shifts, you've also then got to get the customer to shift.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're talking about changing the entire world, which is a little bit ambitious. So will a company change? I don't know. I don't think so. But that's why I wanted to write Simplicity as a book for the individual, where you can still get the benefit and you can still improve your life, even if your company is still stuck in the Stone Age. Now, will companies benefit? Oh, of course they will. I mean, because if what you produce is simpler and still meets the need, still delivers the value, then you're obviously ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I would love to see some kind of adoption at a higher level. And maybe that will happen. See, the trouble is that developers typically don't end up being COOs or CEOs. And so I was going to say it would be really nice if developers who discovered Simplicity would then move on up the organization and kind of spread the word. I don't know if that's going to happen. I think what we have to do is, I think the manifesto was very optimistic and very blue sky and very idealistic. And I think the last 20 years have shown us that that was naive. That's why I've kind of limited my scope this time around.
Mm-hmm. So Rita finishes the book tonight and wants to start putting some things in practice tomorrow. What are the one or two things that will give them the biggest sort of simplicity ROI, if you will, right away? Like, what are the couple of things that you think they should start doing straight away?
Okay, so first thing is to disabuse them of the notion that there is an immediate ROI. You're not going to get that. What you're going to get is a slowly growing sense of mastery.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the actual mechanics of it, the first thing I would recommend anybody do, the very first thing is to decide they actually want to do it. Okay. This is not a question of, I am going to change this thing that I do because the book says to, right? That won't work. It has to be a decision that, yeah, I want to think about things differently and I want to prioritize what I do a little bit differently. Once you've made that commitment, then what you're really committing to is a process of gathering feedback on yourself and using that to change what you do. And this is going to sound really, really prosaic, but I think the best way to do that is to go out and buy yourself an engineering daybook,
mm-hmm.
which is simply, I mean, hang on, where's mine? So this is the one I'm maintaining now,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's just, I think it's actually an artist's sketchbook or something, but it's just blank pages, and I just write in it as I'm going along. And I then go back and have a look at what I've written to get feedback. So I'll say, okay, I'm going to go and, I mean, it can be anything. It can be, I was in a call and someone mentioned something, I write that down. Or I could be trying to chase something down. When I find it, I'll write down where I found it. When I do that, I find that, first of all, the act of doing that actually helps cement it in my mind. But it also gives me a kind of external memory that I can go back to. And I don't know how your subconscious works, but mine is really, really associative. So if I go back in the daybook and I see something, typically that will then trigger three or four other things mm-hmm. that I think about. Getting into the habit of using a daybook is actually a very easy way to start building that intuition. Then I would say, okay, so then look at the things that piss you off, right? What are you doing right now that you don't want to be doing? Or what are the problems you're having that really you don't think you should have? Ask yourself, okay, why? All right. And typically the answer is because that's how we do it, right? We've been cargo culting like a particular set of practices because that's the way the company does it. So then you ask yourself, okay, well, what happens if I don't? Or what happens if I modify it? And if you're smart about it, you can find stuff that you can just stop doing quietly and see what difference it makes. As I say, looking initially at the things that kind of get in your way. So do you find that if you leave a project and then come back to it a month later, it's really, really hard to pick it up because you've got like 1,001 dependencies there and you can't remember quite what everything does? Well, maybe that's the thing you should be addressing. Right? How do I make that easier for myself? And it could be something as simple as going back and looking in a daybook to find out how it works and what the build instructions are. Or it could be, you know what, I'm not going to write projects with this many dependencies again. I mean, if you look at a brand new, oh, I don't know, any project pretty much, you know, some kind of React project or a Ruby on Rails project, you end up with hundreds, if not thousands, of dependencies without actually writing a line of code. You just install the basic project and you've got all of them. Well, every single one of those is a time bomb waiting to go off, waiting to sabotage your code. Every single one of them changes over time. Just this morning, I had code that worked, I don't know, 8 months ago, and I tried to run it, blew up. And it blew up because the latest version of some library that some other library that I was using used changed the way it handled something.
Mm-hmm.
Take a big enough project, you'll never get it to run again. And I don't care if you've got all the best dependency management software in the world, it still won't run. So I think there are many things that, as individuals, we can do just to cut through all of that kind of stuff, cut through the hype, cut through the idea that it's good to use libraries, for example. No, it's not. It's good to do something in a minimal way. If that involves using a library, good.
Mm-hmm.
But the number of times I see code that drags in tens of thousands of lines of code so they can use a three-line function in the middle of it that they could have just written themselves, right? That kind of thing needs to stop. And you have control of that. You as a developer can go, that's stupid. I'm not going to do that. So the immediate hit depends on the person, right? If it's what we're doing is we are incrementally improving what we do. What counts as improvement is contextual. It's always mm-hmm. up to you.
That dependency is something that you go into in the book, the cutting down on the number of libraries and only pulling them in. What's one of the practices that you list in the book that you think it sounds easy on paper, but actually, you know, has been in your experience one of the trickier ones to implement and start getting going with?
Well, so again, that's contextual. For me, the chapter where I felt I was kind of like the most hypocritical was the chapter where I talked about the personal interactions and how to simplify the way you get on with people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Fundamentally, it comes down to transparency and empathy. If you can master those, or not even master them, if you can understand that they exist, then you will find things get a lot easier. To be honest, my entire life, I've spent kind of, I don't know what the word is, my experience told me that I was right more often than I was wrong. Mm-hmm. And that gave me a kind of arrogance when I was talking to people. And it's still lurking there, but I'm kind of working on knocking that back down. And that's to do with empathy. And it's to do with the fact that most disagreements are not zero sum, right? It's not a question of I'm right or you're right. It's a question of we're both probably half right, half wrong. Let's find out which half mm-hmm. and put them together and we'll end up with a better solution. And so those are the areas that I personally found to be the trickiest to write about because they were the trickiest for me to implement. And those are things I'm still working on.
I think we're all working on some of them. I think it's a lot easier to put in place some of the development techniques and practices than it is those other core skills.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not even, and it's, I don't know if it's even, I think it's, so for some reason, people seem to think that work environments are different, maybe,
mm-hmm.
and they require a different set of interaction skills. And to some extent, I think that's modeled by the organizational structure, where it's kind of typically fairly hierarchical and fairly kind of like top-down, edicts on stone kind of thing. But it's not. It's all pretty much the same. And I think this idea of, I mean, fundamentally, again, this comes down to the golden rule, doesn't it? I mean, treat others the way you want to be treated, and things go a lot easier. There is, I mean, a really good example of that where it's imposed by structure is this idea of the meeting. Mm-hmm. There are some good meetings, right? A brainstorming session is a really great reason to have a meeting. Status reporting is the most stupid reason on the planet for having a meeting. You bring 10 people who speak one at a time to a boss who's only there because he feels he should have status reports, or she should have status reports. It drives me insane. I mean, the way that a daily scrum destroys productivity unnecessarily. All of these ideas of formalisms that structure how we talk to each other, they're all adding impedance to mm-hmm. what we do.
I will say that I learned much more about negotiating when I became a mum.
Yes.
Learning, you know, the art of letting go things that don't matter and when you need to actually sort of lay the law down and how to negotiate with a two-year-old is a very important skill that I take in.
But the nice thing about that actually is that it kind of – that your skill set has to evolve as they evolve.
Yes.
And it has to evolve in the right way.
Yes.
And so you learn – there comes a point when you're no longer always right.
Yes.
That's a big lesson.
Yeah. I'm still on my journey. My kids are just about to hit teenage years, and so I know that I'll be very wrong in the next couple of years.
Girls or boys?
I got two boys and then a girl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. So I'd be interested to see, like, 5 years from now what your opinion of that is going to be like.
But yeah. Anyway. Well, for our listeners, one final question for you, Dave, is what's the one thing that you want the listeners or the readers to remember about simplicity?
I think the most important thing to take away is knowing that you have more control than you think you do. Mm-hmm. That you are in a unbelievably privileged position, that you can literally change the world. We have changed the world. I mean, the world today, better or worse, is unrecognizable if you were 20 years. If you suddenly came forward 20 years and all of that software. So we have an immense amount of potential. And we have the capability of using that if we just get out of our own way. So that's, I think, that's the most important lesson. You have agency.
Mm-hmm. I really like that. Well, Dave, thank you for joining me on this go-to book review. Simplicity is out now, isn't it, on Pragmatic Bookshelf?
It's in beta right now. It'll be in print midsummer sometime.
Okay, excellent. Well, grab a copy and read through it. Thank you, everyone, for watching or for listening or dialing in, and see you next time on the GoTo Book Club. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.